Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you would like to ask a question during the question and answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Flor Estevez.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Greater IBM Connections Career on Track series. Today's webinar is once again hosted by our Greater IBMer, Molly Wendell, President and CEO of Executives Network, the only national peer-to-peer networking resource exclusively for executives. This is Molly's number 12 segment in this series, Career on Track. We met Molly back in late 2008, and she, since the day we met her, has been a devoted supporter and contributor, as well as a leader in this alumni community of former and current IBM employees. Her Career on Track series has been a particularly popular one and has hit a mark with many of you who are now turning up in the hundreds to continue to learn from her very wide experience in the fields of careers, executive development, and the job search. So we asked Molly back in 2008 if she would host a webinar for our members, you, her colleagues, and share maybe some of the painful experiences that she suffered as she looked for work for 2+ years. Molly courageously agreed. We built the field. We found a format. She came. She's come. She's hosted. You have followed. And the rest is our history. It's been 12 segments. We're delighted to welcome her once again. We just want to remind you that there will be a replay available after today, and it will be posted once again in the events section of www.greateribm.com. And before I introduce Molly, I want to just let you know that although this is the 12th, and because we're in the month of November, her last Career on Track for the year 2010, Molly will return in December with another hosted series, Molly and Friends, and she's going to introduce us to a very, very special guest and friend. I'm telling you all now, space will be limited. The event will be posted as of tomorrow, so please RSVP early, hold your place. We will only have capacity for about 300 or 400 people. So, Molly, thank you once again on behalf of the hundreds of Greater IBMers who have followed you for the last 18 months. We're very grateful for your time, for your spunky clarity, for your directness, and for all the sound career and networking advice you've shared with us. You represent many of the values that IBM stands for, and obviously our Greater IBMers continue to stand for. So thank you on behalf of our community, and welcome once again.
Thank you so much, Flor. I'm really excited today to be here with everyone and talk about something that's been on my mind for, I want to say for forever, every time I meet someone. The topic we're talking about today is what makes you different. And in the past, for most of many of you who've been coming to these webinars, you know that I run a company called Executives Network, and we run networking functions for executives. And we go around the room and we help executives talk about who they are, what they're looking for, and how the group can help. And in the in each meeting, I ask people, you know, they say, I'm a VP of HR. And I say, well, great. What makes you different? What makes you different from every other VP of HR that I've ever met in my life? And the constant feedback from them says that what I hear is, they're no different from any other VP of HR I've ever met in my life, any other marketing person, any other salesperson, any other general manager, any other IT person, any other project manager, any other lawyer, any other accountant. It just, the list goes on and on. And so as I listen to this, I think, well, it's going to be really difficult for you to find a job because you sound like just like everybody else. And in a world of competition, we're all competing out there. We're competing out there for a job. We're competing out there for new business. We're competing for promotions. We're competing for avoiding being laid off. And so as you think about this, whether you're working or not working, you really need to think about what makes you different and stand out with that. I often think, and we can go on to the next slide, about how you define yourself and What makes you different? You really have to start thinking about defining you. And I remember back in IBM training and in sales school, we'd always put the slide in there called Why IBM. And back then, I think if I did it now versus back then, I would do it very differently. I listed just the canned presentation type information. But now I would think really differently about why IBM. What would really be the differences that defined IBM and made us completely different as a company and when I was working there? And how I would portray that to a potential customer, potential employee, potential mentor, you name it. So one thing that you first we're going to talk about is how do you define yourself? There's a couple things. There's a couple books that I go to, and let's talk about the first one. I don't know how many of you read the book called The Discipline of Market Leaders, but it is a fantastic book by Michael Tracy and Fred Wersema. And it talks about the idea that market leaders pick one thing they major in and they minor in two other things. And you have to major in at least one of these things, whether it's operational excellence, product leadership, or customer intimacy. You major in one, and then all your decisions are based on that major. So let's say you're majoring in operational excellence, then your return policy is based on efficiency, not what's best for the customer. Operational excellence also says, from a supplier perspective, it's based on efficiency. A company that you might think of might be Walmart. Great operational excellence. They might not be great. The suppliers might hate doing business with them because they're all about being efficient and you have to bring everything into Bentonville, Arkansas to get your product into the stores. But that's what their complete focus is. Product leadership. A company like IBM might be considered, a company like Apple, where you have innovative, interesting products, and you're known for that. And so you're focused on that product innovation. I actually think IBM might be the other one. But you're focused on that product leadership. You're going to have the best products in the whole world, and people will buy that because of it. You may not have the most efficient channels, and you may not, again, have the best return policies, but you'll have the best products. And all your decisions are, if we spend money on this, is this going to make this a better product? Next one is customer intimacy. That's where I think IBM is probably better or probably leads. Nordstrom would be another example of that. Nordstrom, they'll take products back that they didn't even sell. They're all about the customer. And so all their decisions are based on not if the product is a year old, because that would be an operational excellence issue. Not that they sell the highest quality products, because they don't, but they're all about the customer. So the key for each one of these, and the idea behind each one of these, is you pick a discipline, and your decisions are based on that discipline. You have to you pick one to major in, but you have to minor in the other two. You can't have operational excellence and just forget the customer and forget the products. You can't have customer intimacy and forget products and forget being somewhat operationally efficient. And you can't have great products and have horrible customer service and no ability to get products to market through good channels and expect to thrive as a company. So the idea behind this concept, the discipline of market leaders, is you pick one to major in, the other two you minor in, and you need to have, and that's how you make decisions. And that's what defines you as a company. So let's go to the next slide and talk about the same concept, but defining your career. So thinking about who am I, what defines me, how is that unique? You know, thinking about how do you play in this world? What's your major and your other two minors? What are the things in which people are going to make decisions based on you? And then what are the other areas you minor in? So you need to start thinking about who you are, about what defines you, and how is that different? And we're going to end up going through a bunch of different functional areas and talking about what defines people and what is actually unique and what's not. So we'll get into a little bit more of the details behind this concept a little bit later. So another book that I, and we'll go on to the next slide, another book that I think about is a book by Michael Porter called Competitive Strategy. And for those of you who are into strategy, Michael Porter is like the god of strategy. And he came up with an idea back in the 70s called the Five Forces That Shape Industry Competition. And it's Porter's Five Forces, if you've heard of Porter's Five Forces. And the idea is that within an industry, the competition, you have to look at the bargaining power of your suppliers, the bargaining power of your buyers, the possibility of new companies coming into your marketplace, and the threat of substitute products or services of people buying that, and then the rivalry among the existing competitors. So when I always had that in the back of my mind, because I think, again, about when you think about what makes you different, it's about competition. It's about being competitive. And this idea of a competitive strategy, of something to look at and apply to a company, the same idea you should be applying to yourself about how do I compete effectively. So, Floor, let's go to the next slide and talk about what I consider the five forces that shape your career. And I look at suppliers, companies you've perhaps done business with, maybe you're in the supply chain world, companies, buyers, people that you're, who's your customer segment? Looking at going into new industries, looking at companies that you've worked with where other people would buy products or services that could be easily substitutable, and then existing competitors, like who is in the industry that you're in that that might be an interesting company to look at. So when you're, I would say this is really good on the job search side. When you're looking for a new job, you need to start thinking about what makes you, part of what makes you different is who are the people I've done business with in the past? Who are the customers that I've sold to? What kind of products and services did I sell, and what are other products and services that are substitutable in that market? You know, one example might be, let's say you were in broadcasting and working for a television station, and maybe a television station, you know, they seem to be going by the wayside these days, but what's really exploding is the new media and using video compression and video over the web. So the idea is you take a product or service, something that in an industry that you worked in, and substitute out the idea that it's not about television, it's about video, and the idea that it doesn't have to be at a station, but it's an outlet where video is, and the video outlet might be the web, and so there's your kind of new angle to go after. So thinking about who your customers are, buyers, suppliers, companies you've done business with, other competitors, other products. Another person I think of, there's a woman, Teresa, who she knows everything about apparel. Fantastic in apparel. She knows the whole supply chain in apparel. And when she was actually looking for a new position, her problem was that she knew everybody. She'd say, well, I called them. I know them. And everybody knew her, but the jobs were going down by the wayside in that business. And I said, well, let's look at who your customer was. And she worked for a company called Roxy. And if you're a 13-year-old girl, you probably know who Roxy is. And they sell clothing, kind of surf beach clothing and more. And their target market is primarily, I would say, preteen and teenage girls. And so I was looking at that and saying, well, Teresa, what really the value you bring to the table and what makes you different is your knowledge of the market of preteen and teenage girls. That's what makes you different. So let's think about other companies that are targeting preteen and teenage girls. Think about Nike, who's never been able to get into that market. They've always lost in that target, in that market segment. Think about video game manufacturers who are really good in the teenage boy world, but what about the teenage girl world? And so what company, you know, maybe Electronic Arts would love to penetrate that market, but they just can't figure out the right products that market would like. And this woman knows that target market right, left, backward, and forward. So that's you need to think about that and think about those buyer suppliers who that you've done business with, those customers, those vendors that you've done business with, and how that can help make you different. Think about other products and services for those target markets. It doesn't need to be the same product set that you've been in. And think about new industries where the same buyers or suppliers participate that in there, but it's a different industry. A company like Aramark, where most people who know of Aramark probably think of them in the vending space for major stadiums, major sporting events, and they do all the concessions and the uniforms and the linens and all that kind of stuff, consumables. And but the other area that they're in is in healthcare, and they do all the linens for hospitals and a lot of the supplies. And so you think, well, there's a company who where linens is linens. And so just because you've been in the sporting goods, the sporting world or the entertainment world for sports, that's one thing. But you could also go in a hospital depending on what product or service you were selling. So you've got to start thinking about how does what I've done relate to what I could be doing. And this is a lot. These ideas, I would really say, are probably more focused on those in the job search. The next section we're going to talk about really talks about each different area, each different functional area, and how that's relevant for everybody. So one of the things, again, I come back to, everyone says, well, I'm different because. And so I'm going to tell you which each functional area, what I hear from people, and what I think are probably the better things that make you different. And I have to explain on this first slide of these functional areas, and we're going to go through quite a few of them, that when I have that circle slash, it doesn't mean that it's not applicable. It just means that it doesn't make you different. So someone who's in management says, well, I've had P&L responsibility, profit and loss responsibility. Okay, that doesn't make you different. That makes you like every other general manager I've ever met in my whole entire life. So what would make you different? And I put the word trends. I'm not sure if trends is the right word, but maybe it's factors or areas of focus that you might suggest could make you different. One of the things, if I was in general management, I was not only looking for a job, but also in a particular role, I think about the financial state of the companies that I do business with. Am I an expert at turnarounds? Am I an expert at bankruptcy? You know, what's the financial state of companies? And that would be what makes you different. Am I really great at companies where everything's perfect? Well, nobody needs you because most people need people who are in crisis mode, right? And that's what gets you the bigger jobs. People who are really good at the turnarounds, people who are really good at the bankruptcies. And, you know, maybe your role is someone starts it and I maintain it. And maybe that's your thing that you're good at. But that doesn't really make you interesting and different. That just makes you good at maintaining things. You need to look at the workforce, the types of workers that you're used to managing. Are they shift workers? Are they labor unions? Are they professional, you know, college-degreed workers? Are they Generation X workers? Are they baby boomers? How do they work, and how do you build an organization that enables them to flourish? Are you great at mentorship, and are you great at career succession planning, and are you great at retention and thinking about things like that? Are you great at looking at an organization, aligning the teams that actually have an impact on sales? You know, it's one thing to say I'm really good at putting people in the right seats, but it's another thing to say I'm really good at putting people in the right seats, and we tripled our revenue in a down economy. That's what I'm really good at. When all things are going bad, I'm the person to bring in to handle it. So that's kind of ideas around general management. Let's go on to marketing. And if you're in marketing, let's say two ideas. One is, let's say you're a marketing person looking for a job, or you're someone in marketing within the organization and you're trying to figure out how to move up within the organization, or you're a person who sells marketing services. So I have the circle slash on branding. The idea is, if you're really good at branding, that doesn't really make you different. That makes you pretty much like everyone else who says they're really good at branding. But what's really going on in marketing right now, and I just spent the last week I was at a chief marketing officer conference and talking to these chief marketing officers throughout the country and listening to what's important to them. They're all trying to figure out how to utilize social media. They're all trying to figure out, what do I do with Facebook? What do I do with Twitter? What do I do with LinkedIn? And what do I do, and how do I actually maximize that community? How do I create a community, maximize that community? It's one thing to have 20,000 followers, but what are the who are the 5,000 followers who are actually going to buy something? How do I figure out who the real customers are versus the people who are just hanging out on my site? So the idea of social media, the idea of community development, how do I develop communities? I was talking to a mining company recently, and they were they said, well, we want to create a network. We want to create a community because when we want to hire people, we really want people who are in the industry, and we want to know them already. Plus, we want to figure out a way to provide something greater and get to know all potential customers. And I said, well, that's great. But they didn't have idea their ideas to start the community were pretty archaic, I want to say. And I thought, wow, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into building a community, and a lot of people don't know how to do it, but a lot of people want to do it, and it's a very marketable skill right now. So whether you're an agency, whether you're looking for a job, or whether you're looking for a promotion, getting your arms around the idea of how to really build strong community, it's going to put you ahead of the game. I say real PR, real public relations. A lot of people say, well, I'm great at PR strategy. And that, again, that's another thing that doesn't make you different. But what really makes you different is press hits. Real results. I'm able to figure out a way to get you in the media and get you in 15 newspapers, on 30 different television shows, and 80 different radio talk shows. That's what I'm good at. That would make you different. That's a reason why people want to work with you. Strategic partnerships. Thinking about, from a marketing standpoint, if you're really good at figuring out angles of how to build strategic partnerships, and not just the ones that you might expect, but how does IBM go figure out a way to build a strategic partnership with McDonald's, if they so wanted to, right? And what would be the angle there, and how would you get more? I think IBM and McDonald's is probably not the best example, but perhaps IBM and GE might be an interesting example on the idea of Smarter Planet. But how do you go and figure out an angle and build some kind of strategic partnership that is not the common thing? I think back to my college days, and my favorite class in college was called Marketing, Communications, and Promotions. And our teacher, Steve Lee, was an avid sports fan, and he would it was the greatest class. He said, okay, there's a book, but it's not mandatory. And the readings, they're not mandatory either. But what I need you to do is come here and sit and listen to me. Come to class and listen to me. And one of our projects was that we had to go to a soccer game, and we had to write down every promotion that we saw. And I don't know if you've ever done this at any sporting event, but you go to a sporting event, and before you walk in the door, you see 50 promotions. Before you even get there, especially now with all the web, there's at least 50 promotions going on before you ever walk in the door. And, you know, every advertising logo on every board, and then the person standing at the kiosk trying to sell you something. And there's all kinds of different promotions. And thinking about, how do I go into a company and view them as a sporting event and figure out what are all the angles in which I can develop strategic partnerships that make sense, that drive business? Another area that companies are really focused on is analyst relations. Everyone wants to be known by the analysts. And the way you can, if you've never done analyst relations before, the way you can get really good at this is go out and meet a bunch of analysts. Go talk to them, build those relationships, and then you're already bringing the relationships to the table. So these ideas of those kinds of things are going to make you different, whether you're looking for a job, looking for promotion, looking for business, for customer business. Those kind of things will make you different. The old stuff of you know, branding and brand is important, I tell you that, but everyone does brand. Basic communications, everyone does that. Internet, everyone does that. It's this stuff that's going to make you stand out quite a bit. Let's go to the next slide, and then we're going to take some questions. We're going to go to sales and talk about sales, and then I think we'll take some questions, and then we'll come back to the other functional areas. Next functional area, so sales, talking about, I hear people say, well, I'm really great at account management. And if you're an account manager right now, if that's what you're really great at, again, that doesn't make you different than anyone else. That's just gives you, it's like the ante in poker. That gets you in the game. But what really makes you different is what your Rolodex looks like. Who do you know? You know, I was talking to a company yesterday, and they were looking to hire a president. And I said, well, what kind of person are you looking for? And they said, well, what we really want is someone who has Department of Defense contacts. And I said, oh, okay. So I think if you did not have a lot of other things, but you had Department of Defense contacts, you probably would be higher up in the game than someone who knows how to run a company but doesn't have those contacts. So think about your Rolodex and think about your target audience and what your Rolodex is and what your Rolodex needs to be and how to fill that gap. And this, again, goes for people who are selling. If you are selling to healthcare and you don't have a huge Rolodex of people in healthcare, you need to get one. If you're selling to retail and you don't have a huge Rolodex of people in retail, and I mean everyone in retail, I mean the buyers, suppliers, the whole supply chain, customers, competitors, service companies that target that, you really need to think about how do I build a whole supply chain around with my Rolodex, and how do I know everybody in the industry, the whole supply chain, and build that, because that's going to make you valuable. It's that Rolodex that makes you valuable. I was talking to a company recently, and they were targeting chief financial officers for healthcare companies, and I said, well, you know, have you talked to this company, or have you talked to this? And I probably named five in a row that I happen to know the chief financial officer for these healthcare companies. And they said, wow, no, you know, we don't know them. I'm like, well, how do you not know them? I mean, you need to go meet them. And so these are people who are in business to work with them, and they don't even know who their customers are. They're trying to meet them, but they're meeting them in all the wrong ways. They really should be just networking and connecting with them and becoming friends with them, and then they can do business with them. But think about your Rolodex. Think about what you're targeting and pursuing and build that Rolodex. And then people who hire you, whether it's a customer or a company, they really don't care. They care more about who you know than what you know. And again, it comes back to when we talked about those disciplines of market leaders. The who you know is important. You know, you major in the who you know. And you need to have the what you know. You need to at least minor in it, but that's not as important to many people as the who do you know. Another trend or area that is big is customer relationship management tools. There's a lot of them out there, and if there's one thing salespeople are known for is not putting anything in a system. And if you can say, yes, I've worked with SAP, yes, I've worked with PeopleSoft, yes, I've worked with Salesforce.com, or NetSuite, or at least go get trained on those products and say, I have a cursory knowledge of it. Yes, I've used a little of it, not a lot, but at least I've used some of it. Get familiar with that stuff, and then go find some go-to people in those businesses that if you have questions, you can call them. Another area is consultative selling. So many people, and this comes back to not only people who are working, but people who are looking. People say in the job search, I just am not comfortable selling myself, because that's what you're doing in the job search. People who I especially see this in younger people coming out of a college. I say, well, why don't you go into sales? And they say, I don't want to be a schmoozy salesperson trying to sell a bunch of things. And the idea in, you know, really successful salespeople are not those kind of people. They're consultative selling. You know, they ask questions. They don't tell people what they do. They ask questions to create conversation to get to the root of the problem that customers realize that they can solve. So thinking about what your consultative selling techniques are, and thinking about how you display that. You don't tell someone you're really good at consultative selling. You show them by every interaction with them, you're asking lots of questions. You're digging deep. You're trying to get to the root of it. So, and that's how people realize, oh, this person is great, a great salesperson, because they're good at that. I would say for every single functional area, you need to be thinking about that concept and be a consultative salesperson for whatever you do, and meaning asking lots of questions, not telling people about yourself, but asking lots of questions about others. Another trend or area that makes you different is a hunter. You know, there's lots of gatherers, the idea of hunters and gatherers, people who go out and get the business and then people who maintain the business. What's more valuable in an economy like today is people who go out and get new business. It's very important to maintain business, but if you're not getting more, you're doing a disservice not only to your company, but also to yourself. And the idea of account management is, you know, maybe you're maintaining a portion of the account, but you probably need to be penetrating more and more of that business within that account. So a hunter can be someone who goes out and gets net new business from net new companies, or a hunter can be someone who goes out and gets net new business from the same customer. So it doesn't matter what your role is in sales, whether you're managing a territory of accounts already or you're in a brand new territory of new business, you need to be taking that hunter mentality and saying, how do I go build more relationships and get more business for our company? The other thing is in sales, and I'm seeing this all over the place, is maximizing channels. And back when I was at IBM, I was in the channels organization for a while. And you watch how big companies, and lots of them, are all having a challenge of how do we effectively get more business out of the channel of distribution that we do business with. And they're all trying to figure that out, especially in the technology sector, but other areas as well. And if you know how to do that, then you're way better off and you're ahead of the game than many other places. And so if you can help companies maximize their channels and get more business out of their channel, and if you have a methodology to do that, and those relationships, you're definitely different. Okay, Flora, why don't we stop and take a couple questions if we have questions?
Operator, if we have any questions.
And Corey, maybe remind everyone how to ask a question.
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will be prompted to record your name. Please unmute your line and do so when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, to ask your question, please press star 1 at this time.
And while we're waiting to see if someone has a question, I want to answer. There was a question that came up early in the RSVPs, and someone was asking me to make a comment on the lead character in The Social Network, so Mark Zuckerberg, and how arrogant he came across, and how to not come across arrogant, but be able to talk about yourself. And it comes back to this idea of consultative selling. The way that people know how great you are is by how great of questions that you ask. If you ask really smart questions, people will think you're really smart. If you ask very thought-provoking questions, people will think, wow, this person is someone that I need on my team. If you walk up to people and tell them all about yourself, then you're going to turn them off very quickly. And that arrogance, that's where the arrogance comes through. So you can have lots of great skill set and background, but you don't tell everyone about it. You ask other people smart questions that bring out the fact that you know a lot. And it's okay to know a lot, and it's good to know a lot, but you don't have to tell everyone you know a lot. And that's in the face-to-face. I think this person was also asking about how you put that information on LinkedIn or put it out in the market. And I say, whatever you put out in the market, just make it fun and interesting. And check with a few people to say, am I bragging too much? Or do I sound like someone you really want to meet? And that's what you're really shooting for, is am I someone you really want to meet? Okay, do we have any questions?
We do. John Haugen, you may ask your question.
And Flora, will you go back to the previous slide, please?
Yes, Molly. Give me just a second, but while you're answering the call, I'll take care of it.
Okay, thanks.
Don Haugen, did you still wish to ask a question? Donna Serino, you may ask your question. Donna Serino, your line is open. Please check your mute button.
I didn't have a question.
Okay.
Vesela Prevaleski, you may ask your question.
I didn't have a question.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time on your touch-tone phone. One moment, please, while we wait for questions.
You know, Flora, why don't we move on? And
we did have Donna Serino queue back up. Ma'am, would you like to ask a question?
Operator, let's just move on to the presentation. We'll come back to questions at the end of the call. Thank you. You can mute the lines now.
Perfect. Okay, next slide now. So let's talk about finance. If you're in finance, one of the things, the areas that people talk about and say that what makes them different is I align, I'm really good at business alignment. I align the finances with the business. And I say that makes you like every other finance person I've ever met in my life. And what might make you different are ideas of your ability to do compliance, SOX or industry compliance, Sarbanes-Oxley, or industry compliance. Those are areas that people really need, and they value that skill set. Another area is if you're in finance and you know how to improve operations without cutting costs, because it's real easy to look at a whole line item and just cut it off and say, oh, I'm really good at improving operations. I just deleted 15 line items. And I just cut a bunch of people. Like, that takes not a lot of skill. I mean, I don't need to be in finance to be able to do that. Anyone can do that. But if you know how to improve operations without cutting costs, that is interesting, and that will make you different. Working with sales and marketing, you know, figuring out how you can better support sales and marketing in a finance role would be great. What's going on from a credit standpoint for your customers? What's going on from a accounts receivable standpoint from your customers? How are you doing a better job of working with sales and marketing to help grow the business? That would make you different. It's interesting. I met John Kennedy, who's a VP of marketing for IBM. I met him at this conference last week, and he was saying for the first time in his life, the CFO asked him or told him that he'd like to give him more money to spend and increase his budget. And he's like, that has never happened before. And every other chief marketing officer was going, wow, that's exciting. That never happens. Usually they're trying to cut the budget. But it's because of this whole Smarter Planet thing and how IBM is building such a great brand and how what a difference it's making not only for customers but for employees and for communities that they want to spend more money and put more money into this concept of how do we build a greater brand around that and how do we truly build a better world for all of us. So it's interesting that the CFO, IBM CFO, and I don't even know who it is obviously really focused on how do I help grow the business, not how do I cut a bunch of costs, especially in that area. Now, someone who just got their department reduced by something is going to say disagree with me, but there's one example, all right? Next area we're going to talk about is operations. And operations, people who've been in operations had talked about Six Sigma. And I think we went one too many slides. Let's go back one. People in operations talk about Six Sigma and how they're in lean manufacturing and that makes them different. And can we go back one slide, please? And what makes you different actually in operations is your ability to participate in or ability to do well in turnaround situations and ability to create efficiencies without spending additional money and looking at process and how to remove costs in the process. I think we need to go back one more again. You were there just a second ago, please. How to reduce costs within the process and create those efficiencies without spending a lot of additional money. Figuring out how to have healthy supplier relationships. Flora, can we go back to get back to operations? We need to go back one slide, please.
Hi, Molly. Just froze for a moment. So
okay, thanks. Sorry. I kept going back and forth. Healthy supplier relationships. You know, what kind of relationships? If you're in operations, you're obviously dealing with a lot of buyers and suppliers. How do you have healthy supplier relationships, healthy relationships with all your key constituencies? How to have global competitiveness? I mean, if you're competitive globally, if you know how to operate globally and have that competitiveness, that makes you stand out quite a bit. And then quality, focusing on quality, but really true quality. Things that it's one thing to say, yeah, I do quality, but it's another thing to wrap an entire story around how you made one minor change that improved the quality of the product and reduced the defects and reduced the returns down to 0.001%. You know, things like that. That little situations that you can specifically talk about that help you look different. The other thing that, as I'm talking about that, I'm thinking that in terms of that, you need to be asking other people about those things. You know, what is your return rate? What is your defect rate? What is, you know, how many times do you have to recall something? And what are you doing to reduce that? And what are you doing in your processes, your operational processes, to reduce that? So those are some things on operations. We're on the legal page, so let's just stay there right now. The legal idea. Anyone who's in legal, who is a lawyer, whether you're in your own private practice or whether you're inside the corporation. If you're a corporate counsel, if you're general counsel for a company, that doesn't make you different. That just kind of puts a label on what you do, but it's not that fascinating. It's not going to be what gets you the job. What gets you the job is your ability to handle transactions. Maybe it's corporate transactions for a specific area. Maybe it's mergers and acquisitions, and that's where you really do well. Maybe it's working with high-risk companies and heavily litigated companies, and that's where you do really well. So focusing on those kind of areas, maybe your customer set is companies that are in the mining business or the manufacturing business where there's all kinds of issues going on, and that's where you really thrive. I remember talking to a guy who he was a general manager, and what made him different is he worked really well in crisis management, crisis situations. So when there were emergencies and all kinds of bad things going on, he shined. And so we thought about companies to target that included when they had a crisis that was a real crisis, like a plane crashing. So airlines would be really good, like a mine where if workers died, there'd be a huge crisis. You know, things like that, like an oil spill. Those were great targets for him because that's what made him shine. Let's move on to the next one on information technology. If you are in information technology, the idea that you align technology with the business doesn't make you different. It makes you just like everybody else. What would make you different are these ideas. Social media. How have you figured out how to maximize social media within the technology environment? How are you looking at identifying or creating mobile applications to increase sales efficiency? How are you focused on driving revenue for the company? And how are you focused on the things that you do helping drive revenue for the company? So these are things that you need to be thinking about. Let's say you're a programmer and you're working on some project and you go talk to some sales reps and they say, boy, it would be really great if we had this, or here's our problem, and you figured out some mobile application that you could quickly create to help the sales reps do their job better. I mean, you think that the company would want to move you into an area or give you a little accolade or the more you do that, the more they realize what a value you are to your organization. And maybe the more you do that, the more other companies realize what a value you might be to their organization. So you've got to start thinking about, don't just think about my functional area and what I know, but start thinking about the cross-functional and how do I really help the whole company drive to success. The next area is human resources. And I hear all the time, I'm an HR business partner. And I'm like, oh, so what? So is everybody else, again. But here's what's interesting, what makes you different in HR is your ability to maximize productivity, your ability to work with workforces across generations, whether it's Generation X or Baby Boomers or Gen Y or those other people. I can't remember the other generation. But how do you really maximize that? I know a guy who said he's probably late 50s, early 60s, I would say, and he said, I just do really well with kids right out of college. They come to me, they talk to me, I am really good in that environment, and they trust me. And so his perfect role in terms of a company, in terms of a customer, is focusing on that target market because he does really well there, and it makes him very, very different. You know, a lot of companies are really trying to figure out how to get how to maximize productivity in every generation, and they're very much struggling because there's a huge difference between generations and work ethic and what's important to each generation. And you hate to hastily generalize an entire generation, but the majority of them are the attributes are true, and so you've got to think about how do I look at each generation and how do I figure out how to work with each generation to get the most out of them. Other thing is workforce types, labor union, shift workers, again, professional workers. Who do I really excel with, and how do I ensure that I help grow the business through retention and through increased efficiency and effectiveness of the workforce? How do I help sales be better? You know, a lot of hiring decisions, many, come through human resources. Many people I know who are in sales don't believe that HR hires always the best people or the right people. And so how do you ensure that you are really understanding what great salespeople do and what kind of support they need and who the right people are, and how are you out there every single day building your network and looking for those kinds of people on a daily basis versus when you just have a job rec? So how are you doing a better job of networking with people and building those relationships before you need them? So that's human resources. Supply chain, this is the last one we're going to go through, and then we'll open it up again for questions. Supply chain, vendor management, everybody does that. That's nothing new, nothing different. But what is different is ability to do a better job of helping with forecasting, a better job of working with customers and thinking about the supply chain and how that's affecting customers, a better job of looking at tools you've used and knowing all the other tools out there. Let's say you've only used SAP, but what are the other supply chain tools that you should know about, and why don't you make calls to all those companies and start getting to know those tools in those companies and figuring out what works and what doesn't, start building those relationships around those. What about sustainability, and how are you focused on sustainability and bringing better sustainable practices into your organization? That stuff is hot right now. And if you know how to do that, great. And if you don't, learn it. Because that is, even in operations too, if that's kind of part of your bag of tricks, you're going to be very much more different and in an area that people actually want it. I say systems and rules and analysis. What rules have you put in place that analyze the overall opportunity, whether it's sales, whether it's marketing, whether it's promotions and transportation costs? And how have you really built an analytical engine to create better performance in the supply chain world? So these are some of the things that for every different functional area you need to be thinking about. Now let's go to the next slide and come back to the ideas of the discipline of your career and who are you and what defines you and how is that different. And you really need to pick, you know, what is my major and what are the two minors? What is social media going to be my major? Is turnarounds going to be my major? Is community development going to be my major? And I would say for every one of you, a Rolodex needs to be in one of those three pies. And maybe your Rolodex is your major, but if it's not, it needs to be your minor, one of your minors, one of your two minors. But you need to figure out which one's my major out of all the stuff that perhaps we talked about or perhaps stuff we didn't talk about, and what are the other two areas that I'm going to minor on and make sure Rolodex is in there at least once, because it's about relationships, and relationships are going to get you in the game every day of the week, and what makes you different is going to get you the job, whether it's the customer, whether it's the new company you're working for, whether it's the promotion, that will get you the job. Also think about the what the company looks like, who your buyers and suppliers are, who your substitute products are, your customer sets. Are you a consumer? Do you do business to business? What are the market segments within that? What are the revenue sizes? What are the company profiles? Who, again, are the customers that you target? Where did, you know, thinking back to your Rolodex, where did a lot of alumni go from the school you went to, and how to leverage those? How to leverage those contacts and those industries and those, that Rolodex, and how to really figure out new ideas of kind of re-energizing your, not only your career, but re-energizing you. That's really what it comes down to, is sometimes the skill that got you there before is not the skill that's going to get you there today. And so you need to really be thinking about, how do I continually advance my skills? How do I continually learn new and exciting and interesting things? And how do I apply those principles in my current job? So, and a lot of those principles might not be from areas or industries that you're from. I'm actually reading a book right now, and it's a fascinating book. I would recommend it highly, called Failing Mr. Fisher. And it's about a high school teacher. And he's talking about how tough it is to be a teacher, and kind of what every teacher wants to say, but they're not allowed. And he just wrote a book about all these stories of things that kids do in high school, and you're scared almost for society, of what kind of society we are bringing out into the world, and what kind of society we're going to have. But the ideas, some of the ideas in that book, I look and I say, this is education, and I'm not in high school education, but some of the concepts, it's really making me rethink what other areas and what other skills and what other things that I should do, and how I can go about better communicating with people and looking at this younger generation and figuring out what makes them tick and things like that. So sometimes it's not about knowing everything in your own industry, but looking outside other industries and getting ideas and getting a broad spectrum of things to have a conversation about. So that's kind of what I wanted to cover today. Do we have questions? What I'd love to do, and this would be really interesting, if there's anyone out there on the phone right now who says, you know what, I'm really not sure what makes me different. I haven't figured it out yet. If you want to just give us get on the phone or press, I think it was star one. Is that right?
That is correct. Press star one and unmute your line and record your name.
Okay, perfect. Press star one. And what we'll do is we'll listen to a little bit of your background, and we'll try and figure out what would make you different and maybe what you should use going forward as one of your three circles of your disciplines of your career. And then if you have any other questions, let's ask it now, too. Press star one to ask a question.
Rhonda Spray, your line is open.
Yes, I had a question, but I'm also interested in what you would think makes me different. So where would you like to start?
Let's start with your question, and then let's figure out what makes you different.
Okay, the question was, when you were going over the different things that stand out and make you different, you were saying they were trends. Mm-hmm. What do you really need to fall into one of those areas? Because as I look back over a multi-year career, I had a strength in and maybe one in operations and a different strength in marketing. And would that make me appear scattered, or would that be a good thing to have strengths across a broad range?
What's really interesting now in a kind of a big overall trend is it used to be that you grew up in your functional area, right?
Right.
You grew up as, let's take marketing for example. You started as a marketing coordinator, then you became a marketing manager, then you became a director of marketing, then a VP of marketing, and then a CMO. And it used to be that way. What I'm seeing now, and kind of the big overall broad trend, is that there's huge value in having other functional area expertise. So the mix, the combination, makes you more interesting. The fact that you've had operations and you've had marketing makes you much more interesting from an overall management standpoint than someone who's only had marketing or someone who's only had operations. So I'm seeing the new chief marketing officer for Target, Kenya Jackson, he did not come from the traditional discipline of marketing. He actually came from the stores. So he worked in the stores and worked his way up the stores. And now he's their chief marketing officer. And if there's one thing he knows, it's the customer. And that's what made him different, and that's why they want him. And he has such a fascinating viewpoint and vantage point of looking at things because it all comes from the customer. So that's actually a really good thing. What you have to take that skill set and be sure to figure out the right companies that need that, that it would be most applicable toward.
Okay,
but so let's talk a little bit about your background. And talk about what makes you different in addition to that.
Okay. Most of my background has been spent in technology, but prior to technology, I spent about 10 years in the ag chem business. I started out of college as an intern for Dow Chemical on the Agent Orange public relations issues.
Oh, wow.
Moved up through marketing communications, then moved into a unique opportunity and kind of a Hollywood entertainer PR person, and from there I made the decision to move to technology, and I felt that the best way to start in any new industry was through sales. So I started in sales, moved up the sales channels into marketing, and I've done strategic marketing for AMD, I've done brand marketing for Compaq, and I've been 11 years with IBM in various and sundry levels of marketing, both hardware and software. So that's kind of the pedigree list, but that doesn't say what's really different about me.
Yeah, so what would you say, I mean, if you were to pick, if you were to say, my favorite thing to do in marketing is X, what would that be?
Be in front of the customer, understand the customer's needs above all else, because as long as you have that level of understanding, any program or any project that you endeavor is more likely to have a greater success.
Okay. Okay, so then let's go back to once you're in front of the customer and you figure something out, then what's your kind of favorite thing to do, like within marketing? Or is it sales? Because it's really, you sound more like a sales leader to me.
What I've been doing in marketing for the last 5 years is putting together the sales scenarios.
Okay.
and sending those out for the various brands. So it became a bit more project management than making sure I was on target.
Okay. So here's where I would say here's a bold statement, and you tell me if this is you. I know how to create programs that actually increase sales for the sales force.
That's true.
That's what makes you different.
Oh, okay.
That's it. That's your complete focus. So you need to go, you know, be looking for sales-driven divisions, mm-hmm. sales-driven organizations, sales-driven anything, and say, you know what? That's what I do. You want to sell more? I can make that happen through programs, through marketing. That's what makes me interesting. I'm all about the customer and sales. I'm a marketing person who's all about the customer and sales. Because many marketing people that you'll meet will go on and on about how they run events and how they do public relations and how they do branding and how they do the best collateral you've ever seen and stuff like that. But they're not talking about driving sales and being so aligned with the salespeople that they know what makes them tick and they know how to increase revenue for the company that way. And that's a different conversation, actually, than lead generation, because I didn't hear the words lead generation out of your mouth at all.
No, that's really not my specialty.
Perfect. Okay, so that's different. And it's a great one. and you know what I'd love for you to incorporate somehow is this concept of that go back to your entertainer kind of idea and think about what worked. Did you say you did marketing for an entertainer or you were in the entertainment?
I did marketing for him. I was his PR person.
Okay. Think about the concepts around that because that – and you had to make that person interesting, right, and appealing and attractive and someone that people really wanted to see, right?
Right.
It says, think about how you can take that same concept and wrap it around your salespeople.
Ah, okay. Thanks.
And that would be an interesting angle because you have a unique talent there that not a lot of people have. And thinking about the other angle, too, is thinking about how you become a personal PR agent to every single sales rep that you work with. You know, how much are you getting them in front of speaking opportunities, and how are you training them to do better speaking, and how are you getting them in conferences and on the stage versus in the booth and trade shows and things like that, and how are you building... You know, take every salesperson and treat them like that entertainer and build a custom, you know, maybe it's a custom plan for a group of salespeople versus a single, but here's your plan for your group and here's how we're going to promote you guys as people, as subject matter experts, as things like that. That would make you different.
Awesome. Thank you
and
for help.
No problem. And really cool, by the way. Who wouldn't want that? So, okay, next.
And our next question from Kathy Chang.
Okay, Kathy.
Hi. I have a technical background, and I've done sales for a while. I did pretty well, then went into business value sales and ultimately was reworked into product marketing. So I did product marketing for some time as well. And my mid- to long-term goal really is to run a team in that could potentially be a site in Asia because I am bilingual and bicultural.
Okay.
In order to do that, I've been accumulating skills in different spaces. So, sales, marketing, a little bit of business development, did some sourcing. So. The issue I'm running into while I'm building this portfolio for this general manager type of role is, it looks like, I mean, it's a great, impressive resume. However, people who are looking to do sales, your profile doesn't quite fit that because people are very focused in doing sales. People who do marketing have a different set of a different kind of resume as well. So I'm running this into this issue that I don't quite have everything I need for general manager, but yet I have a set of different accomplishments that I'm working towards that position. So advice would be appreciated.
Kathy, what's your Rolodex like in Asia?
I have some contacts. I have contacts from the institutions that I'm affiliated with. So that would be Carnegie Mellon, MIT, and through my husband, UC Berkeley. So just as an example, there's over 500 people from the MIT business alumni group that I just did a search the other day that's located in Asia.
Okay.
Inactive.
So that's not a Rolodex, right? That's
no, it's not.
People who know people. That, but that's okay. What I would suggest is you go build a Rolodex in Asia, and you say, I know how to get this done in Asia, because you would be a huge value to organizations who are trying to expand in that marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know the people in that marketplace, and I think that would be what makes you different. If you could say, "Yeah, I can help you expand in Asia. I know everybody out there," and for your your sector, buyers, suppliers, customers, I know how to get it done. That's what you need to make you different.
So would this be valid as a Rolodex if I have, for example, a friend who is in technology investment, and he has the different channels of how to open a site, how to obtain the necessary paperwork.
You need to go meet those people that your friend knows.
I see.
Don't just have friends who are over there. Know all of their friends.
Yeah, I basically have to be there.
You need to be there. You need to get out there, spend a month out there, and meet with 15 people a day or 5 people a day and just start building that, and talking on the phone and Skyping and just start building those relationships and start saying, how did you do it? And talk to other people who've expanded into Asia and find out who they know and say and figure out what their Rolodex is like and what were the issues that they faced, and start really uncovering, here are the problems you're going to run into. And when you talk to a company and you're like, oh, you're going to expand, boy, have you thought about this and have you thought about that? They're like, whoa, she knows something we don't know. She can help us do that. And think about the whole supply chain. So think about real estate. Think about sourcing. Think about suppliers. Think about customers. Go back to that industry forces, Porter's competitive forces, and look at all those buyers, suppliers, substitute products, other competitors, new entrants. Think about that.
Yeah, I mean,
but your number one thing you're missing is your Rolodex, because if you had your Rolodex plus what you already have, you're good to go.
Yeah, this certainly makes sense. Thank you.
Okay.
The issue now is going to be execution. Thanks.
Awesome. Make it happen. Okay. All right. We'll take two more, I think. And do we have two more?
We have one more. Howard Digby.
Oh, great.
Your line is open.
One more. And then we'll close it up.
Howard Digby, your line is open.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Howard, yes.
So I'm almost too different for everybody. I've been overseas. I've been in Asia for many years. I've worked in technology, and I've worked for The Economist, which is a really cool kind of place to work. And I find myself back in a very small town that's called Perth, and it's all about mining. And many years ago, I did work in mining, but as a cadet. So it's so different, right? And I'm trying to sort of match my skills. Now, clearly, I'm not going to get the kind of job that I had before when I was in Asia. But I have to kind of position myself locally. And so difference is not a problem, but it kind of is, because when coming up with, I've been a managing director, I've been in sales. When coming up with what's different about me, I'm struggling because I'm trying to pitch myself as a generalist so I can transcend industries.
Right.
And I don't want to have to start again at 44, right? I don't want to start again at a very junior level in the mining industry. It's not going to happen. Or whatever the adjacent industries are that sort of power this economy here. So I'm trying to, like you said earlier, what are my skills and how do I translate that to this role or these roles? But someone, well, I was having coffee with someone, and he said, look, everyone's a generalist, you know, I have to come up with what's different about me, but then I'm almost kind of too different.
Well,
so
I don't think you're really that too different, but tell me, when you were in technology, you said you were in sales, you were a managing director.
Yeah, when I was in technology, I came up the sales route, starting at IBM and then moving to technology companies, sales in channel, sales direct, consultative selling to large accounts, then going up the management and eventually being a country manager and a regional manager.
Okay.
And I just jumped industries as a senior sales leader and then as a general manager.
Okay. And do you want to still be a general manager?
I do, but you know what? I'm totally cool about that because those roles aren't necessarily going to exist. The national roles and regional roles are not going to be here unless I join a completely different industry.
Well, honestly, what I think, and sometimes, you know, I get these feelings about people, like, like I know what you're supposed to do. my gut tells me that the job you find is not in Perth, but the fact that you are on the ground in Australia makes you different to a company that has no on the ground there.
International company?
Yes, absolutely. There is so much going on in Australia right now, so much, and so many American companies need people on the ground in Australia who know that.
Yeah, and they need them in Sydney and Melbourne. So here's that's the problem.
Okay.
So this town is all about like mining. It's all about China. So
okay.
I do have that, and I've got an amazing Rolodex and all that. But then so have lots of other people. So that's not a different thing here.
Okay.
There are any sort of returnees coming back here and saying I know all about Asia. I get what you're saying about that, but there comes to a point where that's not different, you know. But I can still find differences within that.
What about selling technology to the mining industry?
Okay, so that's a really good thing. So I'd be looking for an individual contributor role. I've always wanted to do that again,
mm-hmm.
Where I could relate to senior people because I've done that.
Right.
But I wouldn't actually it wouldn't be abstract. It would be real.
And right.
I wouldn't have to manage anyone, right?
Right.
The trouble
right.
is, I talked to some companies, and it's really cool, you know, talk to a young guy, and I've been his boss's boss, right?
Right.
I'm totally over that, and I like him, and I'd love to report to him. But they don't believe that. They think someone of my background is going to take the job and then get run when something comes better, yeah.
Right, right.
So I've got to sort of not be too different, but find the differences that matter.
I think it's important then that they don't know your background.
Okay.
Because once you take that out, they can't say they're not worried about it anymore because they don't even know.
So do you recommend you sort of dumb down the resume?
No, don't dare dumb down the resume. Just don't show it.
This whole place is powered by resume. Send us your resume. You know,
Well, you need to go back to the concept of it's not about your resume. It's not about a job. It's about building relationships. And people will hire people they like, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You go meet the right CEO, and that person is going to realize that you have this incredible capability with people and with customers and knowledge. And it's not because you tell them all the things you've done, but, again, back to the smart questions and asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And they're going to say, I need this person on my team. Chances are good they'll say, I need this person managing my team. But it's not about you applying for a job, and it's not about you taking, you know, going and saying I'm going to take something lower level because they do believe that you're going to leave. But it's about sometimes going to a brand new industry really helps because when you don't know the industry, it's less likely that you'll run the place, right?
Right.
And so not having that background is a benefit if you'll do whatever it takes to get into that industry. But I really think this idea of selling technology to the mining industry, if mining is so big in Perth, and mining's big in Asia, right? And there's a great article in Fortune or Fast Company, this last issue, that shows every country and what they mine and what percentage of the world market they have in it. It's really cool. You should look it up.
okay.
But I think about companies, I mean, international companies that are trying to get more into the mining industry. So if you're going to target that, you need to start meeting everybody in mining.
Yeah, and I have been doing that. And people have been wonderful. I've been working.
But not necessarily only locally. You need to go international with this.
Yeah.
And start building those relationships, because I bet it's through that relationship that you're going to end up having a conversation and someone will say, hey, we could really use someone like you.
Yeah.
And I really think it's going to happen internationally, not locally. So you need to start pursuing those. Oh, I feel like I'm like a fortune teller right now.
I appreciate this. Thank you.
You need to start pursuing those relationships internationally in a big, big way.
Yeah, okay.
There's
I'm going to do that anyway because that's my part of my special sauce. I've got to keep cultivating those international relationships.
And go back to my blog and read the blog on smart questions.
Okay.
Because that will really help.
Okay. Thank you.
And I have a couple others. Transitioning to a new industry, read the blog on that too.
Okay. Smart questions and transitioning to a new industry. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Hi, Marty. We can take one more call and we need to close it out.
Oh,
okay.
Do we have one more call?
We do. Dan Lacine, your line is open.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Is it Dan? D-A-N?
Yes, Dan.
Okay, great. Okay.
I've been with IBM for a number of years, and I was in the technical education area.
Okay.
We did everything from creating courses. I created courses, technical courses, presented them live on the web in a virtual classroom environment. And also, I would manage other folks under me, SME subject matter experts, when we came on a new product release where others needed help.
Okay.
I also taught some of the instructors and moderated some of the online sessions.
Okay.
So I'm interested in expanding more into that area and in using multimedia also.
Don't call it multimedia because that's an old IBM term. Even though it's not. Nobody calls it multimedia anymore.
So what do you call it?
New media.
New media?
Yeah, there you go.
So I'm looking for something in the area where I can use my education background. I have a PMP credential, project management professional, and I've been converting like technical information to make it palatable to folks who are supporting the product.
Okay. Here's what makes you different. All right?
Okay.
I know how to package knowledge and make it available through a number of mediums. I know how to package knowledge through video and make it available through a number of mediums. What you need to do is you need to, if you haven't put some videos out on Facebook and YouTube, you need to start doing that.
Okay.
Okay? And you need to wrap your arms around the whole social media space and combine the packaging of the knowledge out to the social media world, and that makes you different.
Such as
YouTube,
instructions,
Facebook.
And stuff like that?
Well, I think there's two concepts going on in my mind right now. There's a guy who just got like $1 billion. I don't know how much money. He got so much money. Maybe he got $100 million or something. He has a university, and it's like Cantor University, and he teaches basic concepts in math. He was started out teaching his kids and then his nephews and nieces, and he just did these online videos in math. And then the Gates Foundation just gave him all this money to really make a university out of this, to make an education system out of this. Companies are all trying. Remember when I was talking about how they're all trying to figure out how to create community and use social media?
Okay.
They're all trying to figure out how to take their knowledge and use social media. So I would target a company and say, let's say Kellogg's, for example, for lack of another idea, and say, Kellogg's breakfast cereal. How do we use social media to help sell more cereal? Well, let's create cartoons or some kind of little show. Let's do world's funniest breakfast mishaps, you know, pouring milk into cereal. I don't know. Displaying the Kellogg cereal boxes. And let's film a bunch of those and make this contest. And it's coming back to packaging video, using it in social media to build community.
Okay.
And maybe Kellogg's is a bad example because you said you do technical.
I've been investigating a local major hospital that has a media center that has a few hundred people in it.
Perfect.
And they've already, so I'm getting some networking contacts in there, and I'm hoping to keep pursuing that and find it looks like it's a growing area.
Perfect. Now start talking about talk, t- talking to as many hospitals as you can to find out how they're using video and what they're using it for.
Okay.
Okay? And call all across the country and find out what they're doing. Because are they using video to target doctors? Are they using video to target customers? Are they using video to target investors? Like, how are they using their video?
Actually, all of the above.
Perfect. So figure out which one, and then how are they using social media to extend that video?
Oh, good. Good idea.
Okay?
Okay,
and,
great.
And you get that social media involved with what you already know, and that is going to make you totally different.
Good.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
All right, you're welcome. All right, Flora, I think we can come
right
back here.
Molly, we need to wrap it up. I'm
perfect.
Just going to very quickly remind people where they can continue the conversations with you. You can post your questions in the Greater IBM Career Forum that Molly regularly looks at. She's very judicious about looking at the questions, your comments, and answering, responding back to them. You can also follow Molly on her blog, www.mollywendell.com. And, of course, you know about her book, and that is available to you at a discount. So, Molly, once again, this was a very, very interesting call, packed with a lot of great insights. And I want to remind everybody that there is a replay. After every Greater IBM event, we post the audio and the charts, and in most cases, a podcast. So please look for it in the greaterIBM.com website. In the events section, it will be posted as of pretty probably tomorrow afternoon, if not by Monday. So, Molly, thank you once again. You've been great. It's been amazing having you here for 12 segments of Career on Track. We're looking forward to your December event. And is there anything you want to tell us about that event?
I would love to. For December, this is really exciting. I don't know how many of you know David Allen. He's the author of a book called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And I read this book, I think, about 4 years ago, and it was just I remember back to IBM and the time management training that we used to take, and it was laborious to me. But this book on how to get things done and how to be more productive, it's absolutely fascinating, and you'll pick up some tips and tricks and ideas to really improve the productivity of your life, because I feel like we all have way too much to do these days, and if we can just increase our productivity maybe 10%, maybe our lives will be a little nicer, a little less stressful. So anyway, this guy, he's fantastic, really fun, and really focused on helping us be more productive and get more things done. So
again, Molly's special guest for Molly and Friends. The last event we will host in career networking, professional development event that we will host for the year 2010. Molly will be hosting Dave Allen of Getting Things Done on December 9th, and we will post that event by Monday of next week, and registrations will close, top out, at no more than 450. So if you don't want to miss it, and you don't want to miss Dave Allen with Molly, then RSVP early, please. And finally, we want to remind you there's a very interesting, very engaging, very informative, and innovative place you can keep up with how IBM is all about enabling people and organizations, companies, and the world at large to creating a smarter planet. And it begins with people, and you are one of those people. So Molly is already a member of People for a Smarter Planet. If you want to be smart like Molly, follow those people that are following the People for a Smarter Planet. There's over 30,000 people in it now, and it is fascinating, some of the things that they're engaging and questioning. So thank you all very, very much. We will look forward to greeting you again, if not, no later than December 9th. We thank you. Molly, have a wonderful rest of the month.
Thank you, Flora. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.